This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
I couldn't walk to my car without being called a fag and someone trying to like open my car door to try and pull me out of it.
I was so fearful because I was so protective of my family and so protective of what others may think about that specific thing.
Right now you come across as gay, so we're going to have to fix that because nobody wants to fuck the gay guy. They want to shop with him.
Welcome back to Redefine You, a conversation for well-being, where we have open and honest conversations. As when one shares their vulnerability in such a way, we're encouraged to look within. Redefine You is meant to inspire you to look within and guide you to lead a life being grounded in you. I'm so excited to talk to our guest today. He is an actor, singer, producer, and a dear friend. You may know him from his leading roles in Teen Beach Movie and Teen Beach Movie 2, or from his memorable performance as Link in NBC's Hairspray Live. He's also one of the founding members of Pride House LA, which is working to create a safe space online for the LGBTQIA+ community. Welcome to the show, Garrett Clayton. Hi, baby!
Hi, honey. How are you?
Oh, I'm so good. It's so good to see your face and to hear your voice.
I know. I feel like we've just been on totally different travel schedules for the last couple of years, but I'm so happy to just see you. You look amazing and you sound so just, mwah, hi.
You look amazing. So as I start every single episode, I ask my guest, if you were to check in with yourself right here, right now, what would you find?
What would I find? I'd find, you know, I feel like at the core, I'm still the same person and I have a lot of struggles that I've dealt with most of my life. But the place I'm at now is I feel really happy and secure and like ready for this next phase of my life. And I feel like I'm in a really positive environment surrounded by a lot of love and a lot of support. And although there's all those like core insecurities that we, I think just as people deal with, it's a lot easier to navigate them because I feel like I'm in a place in my life where I have the tools to, even if those issues are resonating in my head, I'm like this, mm-hmm. I'm invalidating them on my own, just saying like, it's okay for that to not matter. It's okay to like feel this feeling and let it move through me and let it move on if anything is upsetting.
Yeah. And I think that it's taken you and even myself a long time to get there, right? It takes time. It takes practice. And for you, I'm curious to jump into your toolbox at some point in this conversation. But I do need to start. And I just want to start with saying, hi, haven't seen you in so many years. But
hi,
I know
you.
That I've always been such a big supporter of everything that you've done and created and just the love that you've shown professionally and personally. I want to dive in a little bit about your upbringing. So let's start mm-hmm. there. You obviously grew up and born in Dearborn, Michigan. What was that like for you?
Well, it was interesting, my growing up. I always kind of, it's funny, when people ask me where I'm from, I tell them I'm a little bit of a nomad because before I was four, I lived in 5 states. And then wow. My family went back to Michigan and my parents divorced. And then I spent the next 11 years going to their houses every other week. And so my dad lived in Redford off 5 Mile in Inkster and my mom was in Canton. And it was just like the duality of like, even the interesting part of Detroit. And I always think it's really similar in LA where the different little pods of neighborhoods, like you'll get completely different energy and you'll get a different community. And it really does within both of these big cities, it really is like, if you're going from Van Nuys to the Arts District of NoHo or even Valley Village, like all those places are just so different, but they're all within a 10-mile radius. And that kind of felt like I was really trying to navigate how to live. It felt like I was living completely different lives until I was like 15, 16 years old.
Wow. What was that like for you then? Was it your self-worth and growth within your own sense of self?
It's probably the reason I'm an actor. but it was difficult at first, I think, because my mom was so just like my champion in life. And then I think because I didn't really have a large gay community where I was growing up, and a lot of people didn't really know what to do with me. And so I would deal with like, I always kind of called her my evil stepmother, because my biological father isn't with her anymore, but she did a lot of damage to even our relationship. And so that was really strained. And my stepdad didn't really at first understand kind of what to do with me because he had his own son. And I remember at my graduation party, and at first I was offended, and then it really like sunk in about what a big step this was for him to say. And I remember at my graduation, he said, he pulled me aside and he was like, "I just want to let you know, I'm so proud of you. And when you were growing up, I always wished you were more like your brother, but now I wish that he was more like you." And I know that that was really hard for him because I, you know, like that was his blood related son. And that's a really intense thing to say to somebody that maybe it was hard. You didn't understand them growing up. And, but really, truly, like now he is like he's my dad, and he has been there, and he calls all the time and is like, "Are you stressed? How are you feeling? Are you, know, is everything okay with the wedding? And how are you and Blake doing?" And so it really is, it was really interesting growing up in that kind of environment, not really understanding myself, but knowing that I always tell everybody, if you have one person in your life who can fight for you, they can change it. They can change everything for you. And my mom really did that for me.
You know, you obviously talk about having divorced parents and living in two different places and growing up and just trying to navigate that. I mean, for myself, I come from divorced parents. I mean, a little bit later in life, I would say. When did your parents, how old were you when your parents got divorced?
4.
Okay. I was 14.
Yeah. And they also changed. I mean, we also, my mom moved in the middle, and I think I went to like 4 different schools around the city just growing up. So I would get some friends, and then I'd move to a new school. I'd get some friends and I'd move to a new school, or doing every other week. It was like, how are you going to make plans as a kid when these kids' parents, like everybody, I always think this is wild. Whenever I would move, any of my closest friends, their parents would get weird that I was moving 15 minutes away. Like they didn't have a freaking car. And so I was leaving. My mom was moving to a new place, and my best friend at the time, his mom pulled mine aside, and she was like, "It's such a shame that you're leaving and you're going so far away." My mom was like, "It's 15 minutes down the road. What's wrong with you?" And so people's perception of distance is so cockeyed. Anyway, that was a large reason why I felt like so dramatic.
You tried to like reinvent yourself every new school that you would go to and every new environment? Or do you feel like you were trying to be truer to yourself in all the new environments that you went into?
I think at first, when you're younger and you're unaware of social construct, you're not really trying to be anything but happy. But I realized probably through elementary years that was getting me into fights, because people are scared of the unfamiliar. And I didn't know that people thought I was different when I was growing up. And I didn't realize that's what was making them mad, because I was very like, I was a kid who was pretty comfortable with himself. And then when I saw the way people treated me because of being comfortable, that's what made me uncomfortable. And then that was the thing that when I was going to new schools, I was suddenly trying to fit into this thing that didn't exist, because I saw that it made things easier and people wouldn't try and fight me anymore. Cause I got into, people probably don't, you know, I'm sure people will laugh and be like, "He didn't do that." But I got into a lot of fights in school because people were very, whether it was threatened or they thought I was an easy target, or that there was no consequences because they had stronger ties to the community around them. Like whatever it was, I got into a lot of fights, whether it was people trying to, I couldn't walk to my car without being called a fag, and someone trying to like open my car door to try and pull me out of it, or being at a football game and then getting into a fight because somebody thought, "Hey, let's beat up this guy that we all make fun of for being gay." And then luckily I won the fights because they didn't know that I had taken boxing and karate. But that's the thing when you take those is like, it's all about like, I do everything I can to not hurt somebody with these tools. It's important for me to know that I can defend myself. And so I never really felt like I had anything to prove.
Well, I mean, let's start there. I mean, I think it's one of the things of like, you were always authentically connected to yourself. I know that you've talked about you coming out actually to your mom at 16. What was that like for you?
It was kind of funny because I was scared to tell her Because she had just done that, like, that really awkward talk where, like, a parent holds up a pillow and they're like, on a woman's body, this is the lower half of the body. No. And I'm like, don't you have this fucking conversation right now?
No.
And so it was probably a couple months after that I was like, I got to sit my mom down. And so I was like, I remember saying, Mom, I have to tell you something. And so she sat us down and she was like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, of course. She said, what? Okay. So I'm like, Mom, and it took me a while. And I said, I'm gay. And she was like, yeah, I know. And I was like, okay, but how do you feel about that? She said, I'm your mother. Of course I know. Do you still want to go to the movies or not? Like, it was literally, that was it. I had a completely different experience with other family members, but that was really the easiest coming out to that. And like I say, she has always been my champion. If anyone would ever do anything, or if I was ever scared, or if I ever felt vulnerable and I didn't know what to do, like, my mom was my champion. She championed my dream. She worked overtime just so we could afford money to get on a Greyhound, and I would do my homework on the buses going to Chicago to audition. I remember, like, she was like, I'm here doing what I'm doing because of her.
I think a lot of what I hear as well is, like, she understood that coping through creativity was your tool back then to be able to get through high school and to be able to navigate when was the right time for you to come out in a public setting to people that you felt you didn't have to be able to explain yourself to. And I think that that's the thing, is like, it's your story, it's your path, it's your journey.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I don't know what your relationship is like with your dad and your other parts of your family, but how did that sort of inflict on growing up into your teens and then going off to college and so forth?
I remember it was probably a few months after my mom. I mean, I'm not condoning underage drinking. I just kind of preface this, but when it's 4th of July and you're in Michigan and you're 16 and your family, your family likes to party, you're probably going to find some booze. And I did. And so I was drunk and I was sitting with one of my dad's friends. And I don't think you have these in California, but like, if you're on driving in a neighborhood road, there's like these little ditches on the side in case somebody like swerves off so that you don't run into a house.
I know what you're talking about.
So I'm sitting in one of those and I'm like kind of crying and talking to his friend. And she's like, you should tell him. And mind you, I'm like, if I was sober, I would have been like, of course you're not going to tell him. Why would you tell him this? Why'd you tell him it's 4th of July? You're wasted. This is not a good idea. But I did. And so I was like sobbing and I'm like, I'm gay and I'm sorry. And my dad was in such shock. And he was like, it's okay. Like, he didn't know how to handle it. And then he really pent up all those feelings. And I remember it was my first movie I did when I was, maybe I came out to my, no, I guess I was 16. Mm-hmm. And I was wrapping my first movie. You know how those shoots go where like things will take way longer because it's the last day and they're trying to get everything they didn't get. And he'd been waiting in the car for an hour and a half. So he was boiling because he doesn't do well with that kind of thing. And he basically texted me and said, like, I'm going to rip you out of that studio if you don't get your fucking ass in the car. So I get in the car and then he unloads everything about how he wishes that I never told him and how he doesn't know what to do with me. And we ended up in this big screaming match. And then a few months later, he moved to Florida with my soon to be stepmother and my little sister. And then we'd kind of, he had a lot of issues for a while and would call and say and do things that were really hurtful. So I removed myself from that situation. I said, I don't think I can have you in my life anymore because you're punishing me for things that aren't about me. And I don't want to feel bad anymore because of you. Mm-mm. And my stepbrother, who I mean, we were in each other's lives since we were four. So we've always just called each other brother. And so my brother ended up having a sorrowful reaction. Like, he just started sobbing when I told him. And I was like, I thought this one was going to be easy. And he's like crying and I'm like, are you okay? Cause I'm okay with this. Like I'm going to be okay. And he was like, yeah, I just, and now we don't speak because he doesn't believe I have a right to get married. And it was all because of Facebook, which is so annoying, but whatever.
I'm sorry. And it's their loss because it's a part of the path. Day, yeah. But I'm saying it's their loss. Cause at the end of the day, you're fucking phenomenal. Sorry for language guys, but you're fucking phenomenal.
And I love you.
I'm curious actually, because you obviously just tapped into saying that that was your first movie set. Your dad was outside. Was that a period when I met you? So let's talk about us. So our relationship, I met you when you left college, you came out to good old Los Angeles to follow your dreams. We were in the same group of friends and I instantly was connected to you. But I also think I was instantly protective of you. I also think that there were pieces of me, and probably because I just came off of my own show. I was born and raised in the industry. I was young as well. And I knew how it shifted with me. And I knew that there was so much success and greatness that was circling around you. And everyone seemed to always remind us about that as well. And it got to the point where I think I was protective because I just wanted you to be able to just enjoy this groundedness that you already had. You had this starry-eyed passion and love for your craft. And I was just like, oh, keep that because that is wonderful. And nobody here really loves it just for the love of the arts. And I love you for loving the arts. So let's stay there. Sorry. I went on a little rant there, guys, but we met each other. And what did you go off and do Teen Beach? Or was that before we met each other and the story that you just talked about with your dad?
So I moved here and I actually turned 21 while I was shooting Teen Beach Movie. And then I met you.
Yeah.
Well, and that was the thing is I think I instantly, if you felt that protective energy towards me, I think I felt the same way because I remember, I remember if we were on the pool and there was at a pool party or if we were out or if we were at dinner or no matter where we were, I felt like we were always like little magnets in that. I understood that kind of path where you were learning about yourself. Like I felt like I was learning about myself, but I never ever felt worried when we were together. Cause no matter what was going on, it felt like there was always someone watching each other's back. And yeah. I felt like in that period of time in our lives, a lot of people had motives that we probably weren't even fully aware of and cognizant or could really see or had the tools to understand yet. But I knew that there was an honest friendship there and that I never was really worried when you were around. And me and you always made a point to like have each other's backs and watch out for each other. And like, if somebody had bad intentions or if someone had bad intentions or if they wanted something else that we didn't know, I remember us like always checking in and always giving each other information and always making sure the other person felt safe. And so that's why I felt like, well, if my friend Haley is going to want to go out and party, I want to not only be there to party with her, but I want to know that she's safe doing it.
I mean, I think a lot, it's wonderful actually to hear you say that you're protective of me. It makes me feel good inside. And I think I haven't necessarily looked back in my own journey back then, you know? And I think during that period of time, there were a lot of eyes on us and in a period when we were still just figuring out who we were and like navigating the industry, but navigating our personal lives and being so young and going through it. And we do have a lot of funny stories of trying to navigate the press and navigate, you know, paparazzi and things like that. And I think we had each other's backs. You know, if we went to a club and we wanted to make sure that even if we weren't at a place of, we had just maybe one or two drinks, we didn't want to be seen. We didn't want people to see us in this vicinity. And we were also probably worried as well that it could hinder us in a certain capacity. So we did crazy things like walking outside of clubs with shirts on our head and jackets on our head. And if you guys want to Google a really funny video of myself falling, leaving a club while Garrett shoves me into a car and jumps in with me. No, I mean,
you're missing a step.
You tell the step.
We're running out of, I don't even know if it's called Bootsy anymore.
Bootsy Bell, yeah.
we're walking out of Bootsy's and we had to hide behind shirts and blazers. And then we had to wait for the car. So do you remember us doing a photo shoot, hiding around the corner from paparazzi?
I mean, this wasn't like a one-time thing, guys. This probably happened like four times. I'm not going to lie. The first time was the first night that we met. Actually, we met at the Nylon party.
Yeah.
And that's when we went to Bootsy's afterwards. And then we were hiding from the paparazzi, we both got into a dumpster. And
we did a full photo shoot. It was my favorite.
Oh my God. I love it. I mean, I think at the end of the day, hey,
Haley, if it makes you feel better, there's a video. I don't know if you were there that night, but I had tried getting into the car, like running away from the paparazzi, and I kept going to the wrong. I went to the different doors four times. I was like, that's not the door. That's not the door. And then one of the guys was like, it's over there.
Isn't it so crazy though? You think about like back then I was so fearful. You were so, I mean, I think I probably put the fear onto you as well though, but I was just so fearful of having anybody see me have a drink in me at all that I used to hide going out of clubs. But then again, you know, now
you were also catching a lot of flack for it. Like I remember people were going out of their way to make this narrative of like, Haley, the party animal. And you were like, I'm not a party animal. I just want to have fun and like be a young person without dealing with thousands of strangers telling me the way that I can like explore. We're all going to be young and crazy at some point in our lives. And I personally, I always told myself I'd rather do it and do it the way I want.
You're
I want
to be party. Done with it.
Yeah. I want to be able to do this the way I want and move on from it instead of being this like weird older person who never knew how to move on with their life.
But I also think that that's a part of like what the show is so important is because we talk about how you can, you know, live a life and still be celebrated and succeed. And I think for me, because of the life that I've lived and my family's lived and their relationship to alcohol has then related into my relationship with it. And that's a very different story. And sometimes that's not fair. That's not fair to say that, you know, things just travel down because it's in the same family. And I think that in that period of time, I was so fearful because I was so protective of my family and so protective of what others may think about that specific thing. Instead of just saying, hey, I went and had a great night with my friends. And, you know, we were actually just running away from the paparazzi because we didn't want to be seen. Like we just wanted to be us. Anyway, moving on from that, let's go on to a bigger and better story. You know, during that period of time, we did lean on each other quite a bit and I loved you for it. And I was so blessed for it. And we had so many amazing memories that I will always hold dear to my heart. But during that time, you know, fast forward to where we are now, you didn't talk about your sexual orientation, nor did I want to ask, because at the end of the day, I looked at you as you and love is love. And I wasn't really fussed with it. I mean, you were just my best friend. It's not, I didn't really care what, you know, what you were doing or who you were doing or what you wanted to do, you know, but I am curious now because we didn't talk about it then. And now it's a huge part of what you do and how you project into the wonderful work that you're doing. So what was that period like for you not being able to come out to your friends? And was that difficult?
It was very mentally damaging to me because I remember it was right around the time, maybe 6 or 8 months before I booked, maybe Teen Beach Movie or something like that. And I sat down with one of my representatives who I'm not with anymore. And remember it was a very Hollywood sit down. I was at the Polo Lounge. It was the afternoon. It was like, you know, and when you're from Detroit Metro and you've only been here a year, you get kind of enamored with like the story and the place, right? And the history. And the person said at the time, are you gay? And I was like, I think I'm bi, because that's, you know, I didn't know how to answer that. It was also 10 years ago when if you were out in the industry, people just wouldn't let you audition for things. So they said, okay, well, they're like, right now you come across as gay, so we're going to have to fix that because otherwise they won't let you in the room. So, and I was like, really? And they said, yeah, because nobody wants to fuck the gay guy. They want to shop with him. So we have to get you some sex appeal. And I was like, okay. I'm like a really goofy person if you're going to try and sell that. And so then it turned into this rat race of like, how do they change, alter me into the thing that's marketable? And so they worked with me on everything from what I was wearing to the way I walked, the way I spoke, the things I would say to people, the auditions I would go in on. They would call casting for notes on how gay I came across and tell me how to fix it and how to hide it and what events I should be going to and how I should associate with people and who I can associate with. The way I would pose in pictures would be micromanaged. And I think you probably saw a little bit of that from, I'm not going to name names, but I'm sure you saw quite a bit of that actually. And it was so micromanaged. And I remember always feeling that pressure. And that's also probably another reason I gravitated towards you, because I never felt that pressure from you. Mm-hmm. And mind you, I met like my fiance now, Blake, I'd met him 6 months after I moved here. And when I had this conversation with that representative, I remember back to him and I was like, I think I'm having an identity crisis because I don't know how I'm going to do this. And so we figured out, well, let's, because my original, like my actual legal name is Gary. And so we thought, well, what if I just make it a character? What if I make Garrett a character? Yeah. And I protect Gary and I let Garrett do the things that make me as Gary feel conflicted. And honestly, the line was really blurred because I would get friends like you, or, you know, I would have all these people that I would start to get close to. And I felt like, again, in my life, which is weird, it feels like this is a common thread where, like, just like when I was younger, I was suddenly living two completely different lives again. I would go home and I'd be in a long-term relationship and I would do the suburban thing and cook dinner and eat ice cream in bed. And then I would go out and I'd have to play this character, because if I didn't, I wouldn't have opportunity. I wouldn't have representatives and I wouldn't be able to live to chase my dream because they just didn't want to represent a gay man. They didn't want to have to do the work to get me in the room to prove to people that I'm a good enough actor to book the job. They just didn't want to do it. And they made it very clear. And so I would always come home and I would have these like mental distress moments and be like, Blake, I don't know how I'm going to, I feel like just like a fucking asshole. I feel like a liar. I feel like a bad person. Like, I'm getting close to these people and I don't have bad intentions, but if I tell them, then I'm going to lose my representation. I'm going to lose these opportunities. And I dropped out of college. I left my whole life behind. I came here after I remember having a garage sale. I sold everything I had. My parents were pulling furniture out of their house just so I could have an extra month of rent, just so that I could chase my dream. And I was like, I can't compromise that because I have one chance to do what I want to chase this dream. And my family gave up everything and let me do this. And so I refuse to compromise that dream, but I also didn't want to compromise who I was. So it was very mentally damaging. And it felt like I was just on, and I had to go to therapy for a few years because I was like, how can I face even people like you, Haley? It was like, how do I face these people after telling them I love them? Like, I really do love my friends that I've made. It's just, I'm in a really fucked up position. And if I say anything, then I'm going to have to go back home.
Yeah, but Garrett, I love you just as much.
I know you do.
But I mean, that's the thing is like the people who have surrounded you, I don't look at that period and go, you know, I needed to know. I didn't need to know. Mm-hmm. It was your thing. You know, whatever was going to be comfortable for you, that's when it should be comfortable for us to have that conversation. And even mm-hmm. though we're having it now, I want you to know I've loved you every second of every day since, you know, I've seen you. I have the biggest love for you. And I know that during that period of time, you know, you talk about the control. And I think that's where, when I was trying to explain earlier, that's what mm-hmm. I saw. There was a lot of control around you. Yeah. And that's where the protectiveness, I think, came in on my end as your friend and as somebody who else was also in the industry, and knowing that the control was just a little bit too push and shove. And it was a little bit mm-hmm. too made you it didn't allow you the freedom just to be. It was like, this is what you have to wear. This is what you have to say. This is what you need to do. And there were also relationships that came into the place as well, you know? And I think there were mm-hmm. a lot of other things that, you know, PR wise, what I'm assuming is there were a lot of pushes on that end as well to tell that narrative and to tell that story. Mm-hmm. And all I can say is thank you for your honesty. Thank you for finally being able to break away from that and to find your power, however you found it. And that, you know, you are so much better and everybody around you is so welcoming towards that, because now you're able to also be a leading force for so many people coming into the industry to know that authenticity sells, even if you're trying to be an actor. You know, authenticity is where life should be. And the power comes in for you. There's other tricks of the trade to walk into acting auditions as the character. You know, you can walk in as the character, walk out as yourself. You don't need to be walking a life in this PR field as the character. Walk in, you know, there's other tricks of the trade if people feel like they only see you as what's being written about you rather than what's going to be booking you the role. And I think that's the disconnect, is back then it was a different place of like, you know, we had Audrey Brienne on here as well, and who's a stylist. And we were talking about how, you know, back then, if we were looking to book a role, we had to start dressing like the role, you know, like it was very much like our blurred lines of personal and professional. Now today it's very separate. And I think that we're all blessed and better for it.
I think we're actually still working towards that, because I can tell you firsthand, because I've been working to getting into the producing side. And I had my first movie I got my producing credit on came out during COVID. I'm working on the next thing right now, and it's amazing. Shaping up beautifully. But I've had producers who still to this day are saying there is no LGBT actor who has foreign value enough that they can attach a queer star and get funding. They still like there is, because they care so, our industry cares so much about foreign value, and they'll either cut out gay people's scenes. They just won't show the movie if they have a queer person in them. They'll like, there's countries that really do impact these things. And really my biggest statement at this point for, I guess, that aspect is we're working really hard towards, if we want to make it matter, we have to make the money domestically matter more than it ever has for the community, because these producers at the end of the day, these studios and these producers care about making their money back more than anything. If they know they're going to make money back on a star, they don't care where the star comes from. They don't care about their background. They care about making their money back. So if we really want to change the narrative in that regard, and that's not just for queer people. It's for, you know, women in film. It's for minorities in film. It's for, like, we have to start making it matter more than ever and showing them that they will be getting their money back.
Of course. And I think, you know, even just internally to that, you know, how did that develop within yourself? So how did you break away and how did you find, you know, your power back again?
It was a lot of, there was a lot of layers to that, because they were having internal issues. And then I didn't know about it for about 5 months. And so I called and was like, hey, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. And one of my point people called me back and said, why are you calling? And I was like, what do you mean? Why haven't I talked to you? And they said, oh, well, I thought you knew about X, Y, and Z. And then I found out I was caught in the middle of something I didn't even know about. Mm-hmm. And then I had one of the heads of the company at the time call me and say, well, I'm not going to make them keep you if they don't want you. So I'll bring you up in the meeting tomorrow. And I was like, well, that's not somewhere I want to stay. And so luckily my agents, I called them and I told them what was going on. And I was like, I basically said, look, there's issues going on at this company that I'm just not privy to. I'm not a part of this. I'm just looking to get auditions and opportunity. Like I'm not a crazy person. I just want to do my job and mind my own business. And they agreed. And, they got the blessing from one of my point people that they could, have me meet with other representation. And now I've been with these managers for the last like 5-6 years, and I love them.
Wow.
I love them dearly. And they supported my coming out, and they were proud of me. And they, when I told them I wanted to come out, they wholeheartedly supported it. And there was no debate on any of the old issues I had. It was like, it was like suddenly someone took the shackles off and was like, just go have fun and do your job well. And we love you.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. And I think that that's so important. During that period of time, when you were sort of on that journey to publicly come out, what was that like for you when you did publicly come out, you know, and how did that inflict on your own sense of worth again, because you finally got a public perception of what you were internally dealing with?
It was interesting because I did have the discussion that I could have went a couple places and done it. But ultimately I thought, well, I'd rather just make it my words and put it on my Instagram and kind of not make a big deal out of it. Cause I didn't want to utilize it as some PR stunt. But then World News picked it up. I like curated the message, and I remember talking to Blake about it too. And he was like, well, why now? And I said, honestly, I'm finally in a comfortable place in my life where no matter the consequences, no matter anyone's perception, no matter what anyone wants to say about my story, it's not about them. It's about me. And it's about my joy and about our love. And I am too happy as me now, after going through therapy, after dealing with all the things I dealt with, and too happy loving you, that it's not worth not being able to share. I want to share our joy. I want to share our love. I want to share this life we're building. And it feels like, it just feels asinine and silly not to say something. And so I put this message together where it was just a picture and a blurb, or like a really long paragraph, and had him spell check it. And then I posted it and I went to the gym. I went to go work with my trainer. And after that hour, I turned my phone on and I had hundreds of messages, and I had all these people texting me all of these links to all these different sites and magazines and things that were like, Garrett Clayton comes out. And I was like, I thought it was going to be a lot more low key.
And then, I mean, from there, was it a good response though for yourself, like to see that and to go through something publicly? Because that takes a lot of strength to do something, you know, publicly that has a lot to do with your personal development, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I know that what I'm hearing is that you knew before you did it, that it was really for you and not mm-hmm. for anybody else, but it was for you. And that's the mm-hmm. beauty of it, isn't it?
It was. I mean, it was nice to see that people cared, I guess. But that was like that felt like a cherry on a cake. It was just like somebody else went and put it on top of it. Like it felt like I made the cake for me because I wanted to sit in bed and eat the whole thing because I didn't really care.
I love it. Well, I mean, we all have mental health challenges. We all have mental well-being challenges. Do you think that over those course of the past like 10 years of your life, were you dealing with any sort of anxiety around your mm-hmm. your development in yourself? I know you talked a little bit about therapy, and what other sort of tools in which did you go down at certain challenging moments in your life?
I mean, it really was about I think the through line of those like double lives happening where it felt like mirrored moments. It manifested itself into me finding a way to be grounded enough that I can be myself anywhere now. And what the biggest thing I learned from even therapy was just that my biggest issue was that I have always been scared of the bottom dropping out. People leaving because of that kind of nomadic life I was talking about before, like whether it was me having to go because of, you know, parental situations or friends deciding they didn't want to be in my life anymore, family members just walking out multiple times, or people removing themselves from the earth. I have so many stories of people just leaving mm-hmm. or me being taken away, that I just started living this life assuming everybody left and that I had to just be alone and deal with things on my own forever. And so really the biggest thing that I had to learn was that those things aren't in my control, and the people who love me are going to stay there, and that's okay. And if people need to go and their path continues on without me, that's okay. It's not about me. That's about their path. It's not a reflection of my worth. It's not a reflection of our friendship or our love for each other. Because sometimes people just, whether they move or they're traveling a lot or they're busy at work or they're busy with their families, 9 times out of 10, it isn't a reflection of you. And you can't live your life in fear that everybody's going to leave, because it's not a healthy way to live. You just have to be happy knowing that people who are in your life who love you will be around. And that doesn't mean that they have to be around every day.
Do you feel triggered at all from just, I guess, the development in yourself of having to sort of shed those layers? I mean, when I hear you talk about people leaving, it's like shedding layers, you know, it's like shedding a layer of a lizard, you know, like that's how I'm looking at it in my head. It's like you've shedded a layer of people that didn't serve you in those moments of your life. And then you're growing into this new, beautiful pattern of being. And, you know, throughout that, do you feel like you've been triggered by people that may have come in and not known if you could trust them to stay from the beginning?
Yes and no. I would say it's probably subjective. Some people I feel more weary of than others, whether it's someone being too comfortable too quickly or someone who makes you work so hard just to be their friend that sometimes it's like, do you even want me to be your friend? And then they get mad at you for not doing it the way they want. And it's like, I'm just trying to be chill. Like if anyone has to work way too hard to be your friend, probably shouldn't be your friend.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, I want to end on a high note because you have now created one of the most amazing things. You have obviously gone into putting your love for your authenticity and purpose in life into creating Pride House LA. So can you tell us a little bit more about this and how that's inflicted on the positives in your mental well-being journey?
Of course. So it was in the middle of the pandemic and we could only have, you know, like 10 people that we picked in our life. And so three of those come from Pride House LA. And it wasn't originally that. It was because we had gotten on TikTok because we all enjoyed dancing and doing comedy. And I like doing characters and makeup and all that stuff. And Molly and Kent, who I did Teen Beach Movie with, and we were like, hey, why don't we just get together and start dancing? Because normally we'd all been so busy, we hadn't seen each other in forever. And Jekka is married to Molly. And so we started doing these videos and then people recognized us as like a unit. After a couple months, because we had started just getting together once a week and we were like, let's do TikTok Tuesdays and hang out and have fun. And like, we can have a cocktail and dance for a couple hours because it's just, you know, like we're all locked in the house. So we might as well get energy out and have fun with friends. And then also there was like this weirdly large audience from Teen Beach Movie who anytime I put things up, they'd be like Teen Beach Movie team. And the funny part is I don't really make that much Teen Beach content. I just duet things that other people make. And which are lovely. And I feel that from them. But Pride House LA was born because people started recognizing us together. And we're a house full of people who are proud of who we are and our queerness and our authenticity. And we realized there's no real queer content house online. So we wanted to be the ones to make it. And then 2 weeks after we made it official, JoJo Siwa came out with our group. Like she came out publicly as a lesbian and we didn't even know she was planning on doing that. We just made a video with her to this song, You're One of Us. But once someone from the house posted it, then the world news picked it up and our Molly, who's close to JoJo, texted her and was like, are you okay with this? Cause this wasn't our intention. We can tell people that this is not the intent. Like this was just a video for fun. And JoJo said, actually, I was trying to figure out a way to tell you all, but I just felt comfortable doing this with you. And it really set the stage for us to create a safe space for the queer community online. Mm. And we recognize that we are comfortable with ourselves and we have been authentic. And so people are recognizing that and they're feeling safe in the spaces we're creating. So now our TikTok is doing pretty well. We're about to start. We just signed a deal with Studio 71 to launch a podcast. We have a clothing line that just came out. We finished a thing we were doing with Amazon Live for a while. There's a lot, and there's a slew of amazing things that are coming up for it. And we're really trying to create not even just in these different apps or online, but also in real circumstances. We want to make like a YMCA called Pride House. We want to create a safe space that inspires young and old people in the queer community where there's no predatory behavior. It's not about, you know, trying to get anything from anyone. It's literally just creating a safe space where people can be who they are and chase the dreams they want. And we want to help facilitate that.
Well, I think you've done that beautifully, but just the life that you have lived as well. And I'm so grateful that I've been able to be a witness of it. And I thank you for all the wonderful work that you do, just living authentically and telling your truth and your story. And your story and your life experiences are so valued. And the way that you have been able to navigate this and also keep yourself grounded through it as well, and to be where you are today, is a beautiful, beautiful thing that you should applaud yourself for. If you were to give advice to anybody about the importance in living authentically. Oh, what happened? Is that a word? To live an authentic life. Oh my God, help me. What would you say?
I would say stop listening to other people and listen to your gut. Always go with your gut. Trust your gut. If you're not doing something that you feel right with on the inside, stop doing it. And if you're doing something that feels right on the inside, keep going and put all your energy into it. It's not about them. It's about you. And that's okay.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
As I leave every episode, I like to tap into what makes you, you. We talk about building our personalized toolboxes. What did you use in your toolbox last time you had a flare up or a challenging moment?
Deep breaths. Focusing on, so I'll like sit, I close my eyes, I do some deep breaths, and then I release responsibility for things that aren't mine to hold on to. Or I get really caught up in people saying or doing negative things towards me. And then I try and figure out how to fix it or feel better. But I really have to, what I've learned is just, if I feel bad about it, I have to let myself feel bad about it, because otherwise it's going to bottle it up. So it's okay for me to feel bad. And then I accept it for a period of time. And then I say, when that's over, I have to let myself go from it now, because I let myself feel it. I let myself acknowledge it, and I have to move on from it.
I love it. Lastly, what are the three biggest lessons you've learned in your life? These could be words, feelings, sayings, moments, stories, whatever authentically comes to your mind.
Keep your head in the stars and your feet on the ground. Keep honest people around you, even if you don't like what they have to say. And lead with love.
I love you.
I love you
too. Thank you so much for sharing your vulnerability, your insight, your truth, your love, all of the above. And if anybody is looking to continue this wonderful conversation with this human being that I love so dearly, you can go to his socials at Garrett Clint One. But thank you, Garrett. I love you.
I love you too, Haley.
And if you're looking to continue this conversation around living an unapologetically authentic lifestyle, then this podcast is just for you. Our goal is to build a community in which you feel empowered to celebrate you by hearing inspiring stories of ownership to self, to always remember to lead with the three M's. That's mindfulness, movement, and mental engagement. You've got this, and we're here to support you along the way. So be sure to subscribe and download so you don't miss an episode. It's okay to not be okay in your journey to become grounded in the power of you.
This has been a Stage 29 podcast production. The podcast is executive produced by Haley Hasselhoff, Patty Ciano, LaFern Cusack, and Stephanie Kaysen. Our audio editors are Jackson Ruff and Jonathan DeMatti. Callie Keltz is the social media producer. And a special thanks to the rest of our podcast crew, Rwani Horenige, William Cusack, Lisa Clark, Katie Brown, and Morgan Kaler.
This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the host and the guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or an entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.